Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased true crime channel. Let's get to the docket. First, the 110-year sentence truck driver? Well, the governor's considering giving him clemency. We're still waiting on a verdict in the Kim Potter and Ghislaine Maxwell matters. Can you believe it's been 25 years since the death of JonBenet Ramsey? And here's a story you're not going to believe. 3-year-old child went missing from a playground. An officer involved shooting in Oklahoma. And there is no crime problem in Philadelphia. Ooh, let me show you an example of some. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. It is Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. Welcome to the program. Let's get to the docket. First, Rogel Aguilera Medeiros. That's right. He is the truck driver who went careening down a busy highway here in Colorado, down I-70. Ultimately, his truck came to a stop where the brakes had failed by hitting several cars, and 4 people died. In fact, they died by burning to death. Well, by today, this morning, 4.6 million people have signed a petition that's asking the governor of the state of Colorado, Jared Polis, to grant clemency to Rogel Aguilera Medeiros or commute his sentence to time served. Now, as you may recall, Aguilera Medeiros was charged with 27 counts of vehicular assault, reckless driving, plus additional charges that were mandatory sentencing charges. On December 13th of this year, he was sentenced to 110 years in prison. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the court gave him the minimum sentence based upon the charging decisions of the district attorney. Now, the district court judge who handled the matter, Bruce Jones, who actually sits in Denver but was sitting on the case up in Jefferson County by assignment in this particular case, said that the sentence was the mandatory minimum that he was required to give under the state law. And he stated, quote, "I will state that if I had the discretion, I would not impose this sentence." That's what the judge said. Now, something that I've never seen before, and under Colorado law, is if somebody's sentenced to a crime of violence, you can request a hearing within 121 days so that the Department of Corrections has time to evaluate all the needs of the defendant in custody. I've never seen a district attorney join in any such motion, let alone file one on their own behalf. So the newly elected DA, Alexis King, filed a motion, even though she's the one that prosecuted the case, not her directly, but her deputies did, and said that after sentencing, she would welcome a reconsideration of the punishment, but she also said he didn't accept efforts to negotiate a plea deal and that the convictions recognized the harm caused to the victims of the crash. And as I stated, Governor Polis' office has received a clemency request and is reviewing that request literally as we speak. Now, Gage Evans, the wife of one of the 4 people killed in the crash, said the sentencing laws should be reviewed, but this sentence should not be commuted, which is the whole point we've talked about. Obviously, a lot of people think 110 years to a young 26-year-old person with no criminal history whatsoever, which some people consider to be an accident, is excessive. But the family members think that it's absolutely appropriate. The family members go on to state that he was found guilty of the reckless behavior that killed their family members and the most important thing in their lives. We'll see what the courts do. Obviously, a lot of people are supporting this young man. Tough, tough case for sure. All right, another tough case, the case of Kim Potter, the former police officer known as the Taser Cop. Remember, she's the police officer, now former police officer, who shot Dante Wright at a traffic stop thinking that she was pulling her taser and ultimately pulled out her firearm and shot Mr. Potter in the heart. Well, the jury has been deliberating since Monday afternoon, and yesterday, prior to ending their deliberations for the day, asked the court what should they do if they are deadlocked. The court gave what they refer to as a modified Allen instruction, which basically says, hey, don't be afraid to re-examine your point of view, consider all the evidence, listen to everybody's points, and maybe you can come to a decision. I would imagine if the jury comes back today and states that they are still deadlocked, the court will declare a mistrial. We will have to wait and see. Now, another case that's still pending and trying to get all these cases wrapped up before everybody heads off for Christmas is the case of Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, the jury in the Ghislaine Maxwell seems to be struggling with some of the testimony of the three accusers involved. The jury asked to review the testimonies of Jane and Caroline and Annie Farmer. Now, the judge agreed to allow the jury to review the transcripts of these three women's testimony, which is very odd because normally a transcript is not available in any court that I've ever tried a case on while the jury is deliberating. I'm not exactly sure how that can be an official transcript because usually it takes the court reporters weeks, if not months, to go back and get a certified copy. So not sure what they did, but they're moving at a high rate of speed for sure. The jury also wanted to review Carolyn's 2007 FBI interview. As you may recall, the defense team for Ms. Maxwell spent most of their time trying to point out inconsistencies in the accuser's story between the details Caroline told the FBI in the interview 15 years ago versus what she testified to under oath at trial. And lastly, the jury sent a note to the judge asking whether Annie Farmer's testimony can be used for the two conspiracy counts involving transportation of minors to engage in illegal sex acts. The court responded to the note by saying, yes, Annie's testimony can be considered as conspiracy to commit a crime in count 1 and 3. So overall, this may show that the jury is carefully weighing each of the counts that Ms. Maxwell has been charged with. And of course, Ms. Maxwell's defense team is elated that the jury seems to be questioning the accuser's testimony. That was the whole theory and theme of the case. As you may recall, their theme was memory manipulation and money. Next, can you believe it has been 25 years since the death of JonBenet? In fact, it'll be on December 26, 1996, when 6-year-old JonBenet was discovered deceased, dead, in the basement of her family Boulder, Colorado home, bludgeoned and strangled. Now, this was several hours after her mother called 911 to tell authorities her daughter was missing and a ransom note had been found. Now, while JonBenet's death was ruled a homicide, nobody has ever been charged in the case. And now, nearly 25 years since JonBenet's body was discovered, police in Boulder, Colorado announced they are assessing if genetic DNA testing can help find JonBenet Ramsey's killer. Now, the police department said they had been working with state investigators on future DNA advancements on Monday. Investigators have identified suspects in cold cases in recent years, such as the California's Golden State Killer, by comparing DNA profiles from crime scenes of DNA testing results that people have shared online through sites like 23andMe and Ancestry.com. Investigators have analyzed nearly 1,000 DNA samples during the course of JonBenet's investigation. Investigators have received, reviewed, or investigated more than 21,000 tips, letters, and emails. Now, detectives have also traveled to 19 states to interview or speak with more than 1,000 people in connection with the case. Now, tests in 2008 on newly discovered DNA evidence on JonBenet's clothing pointed to involvement of an unexplained third party, now in her slaying, and not her parents, John and Patsy Ramsey, or their son, Burke. That led former district attorney, then Mary Lacy, to clear the Ramseys of any involvement. JonBenet's mother, Patsy Ramsey, she died of cancer 2 years prior to being officially cleared by law enforcement. So hopefully after 25 years, something will be done. And can you believe that JonBenet would be 31 this year? Who knows? Eventually this case may in fact be solved. And if it does, we'll bring it to you. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. you're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Now, here's a scary case. That's right. A missing three-year-old by the name of Lena Sadar Kihl, K-I-H-L, disappeared early Monday evening when she was at a playground at her San Antonio apartment complex. Now, in a press conference Tuesday, investigators said that they were using all available resources, including surveillance footage and residents' interviews. The police chief indicated there has been some progress in the investigation since Monday evening, when authorities had not yet determined whether there were potential witnesses who may be able to provide more information. Police are reportedly going door to door of the 300-unit apartment complex for clues about the three-year-old's disappearance. Now, the police chief, William McManus, reportedly said that Lena's mother lost track of her daughter around 5 p.m. Monday, when she briefly stepped away from the playground, returning to discover that her daughter was missing. Authorities appear to be unclear about exactly how long the mother was separated from her daughter, and the family reported the girl missing about 7:15 p.m. on Monday evening. Police began searching right away. The FBI has now joined the investigation. An Amber Alert has been issued by the Texas authorities, which indicate they believe that the girl may have been abducted. Now, although crucial information usually reported in Amber Alert, such as possible suspects or vehicle, was left out, law enforcement said that the girl's mother, who speaks an uncommon Arabic dialect that required the intervention of a translator, has been cooperative with investigators. When she was last seen, she was wearing a red dress, black shoes, and a black jacket. Any information, please call the San Antonio Police Department's Missing Person Unit at 210-207-7660. Now, let's take a look at this video. At least we'll maybe show a screenshot because, well, if we show the video, guess what? YouTube will demonetize us. So if you'd like to see the video, go to scottreich.com. We'll put this up, all right? So the Oklahoma Police Department has released body cam video of an officer-involved shooting that occurred on December 8th of 2021. Now, police say that Officer Andrew Ash was responding to a disturbance call at an apartment complex. Upon arrival, Officer Ash came in contact with the suspect, 40-year-old Antoine Hill. Now, Mr. Hill reached into his pocket, pulled out a pistol on Officer Ash. Hill was waving the gun at the officer and reaching for the officer's gun. Officer Ash repeated, "Don't shoot, don't shoot," and Hill responded back by pointing the gun directly at the officer and saying, "I'm going to shoot you, you biatch ass." Eventually, Officer Ash shot at Hill, who was not struck. Hill then fled into an apartment and later surrendered to officers after an hour-long standoff. Now, Mr. Hill was not injured. He was booked into the Oklahoma County Detention Center on multiple charges. Officer Ash has been placed on routine administrative leave regarding the situation. Ladies and gentlemen, what in the hell is going on in the world? We all knew this stuff kind of went on, but it just seems like it is occurring more and more frequently. All right, remember the mayor of Philadelphia said there's no crime problem there? Well, let me present Exhibit A. There's some surveillance video in Philadelphia that shows armed bandits forcing a groom, that's right, a groom to turn over his Rolex after he stepped outside a wedding hall. Now, ironically, the attack came one day after the Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner said, "We don't have a crisis of lawlessness. We don't have a crisis of crime. We don't have a crisis of violence," despite robberies being up by 27% since 2020 and murders breaking an all-time record in his city. Now, the three alleged thugs involved in the robbery at the wedding hall were arrested Thursday, and cops have linked the crew to at least 10 robberies in the city's upscale neighborhoods in the past 2 months. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said two of the three arrested are just 19 years old. The third is 22. The names have not yet been released. The video was posted on TikTok and Twitter and shows many bystanders walking by as the robbery was going on outside the swanky hotel. Now, Krasner also blamed the police for a low clearance rate, noting last month that just 27% of gun homicides and 15% of non-fatal shootings have resulted in arrests. Tactic there, Mr. District Attorney. Blame the police. That's right. Blame the police. For the district attorney says there is no problem. Isn't that kind of the first step to recovery is that you have to admit that there is a problem first. I think that's what they do, right? All right, finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Cops allege that Levi Metcalf, 31, intentionally elbowed his girlfriend in the face during an argument over a Christmas tree. Metcalf's girlfriend told police that she wanted to buy a Christmas tree for their apartment, and Mr. Metcalf did not want to buy a Christmas tree. After being read his rights, Mr. Metcalf reportedly admitted to striking the victim in the face with his elbow during the tree dispute, but claimed it was simply an accident. A lot of accidents going along these days. This was apparently the second visit the police had had made to the Metcalf's residence that day, although it's not exactly clear what the reason was for the first trip, but my guess is that she probably tripped and fell, and that's probably why she got that bruise on her face, right? If she was just a better girlfriend, this wouldn't have happened. I say that jokingly, ladies and gentlemen. That's sarcasm. Now, Mr. Metcalf has pled not guilty to the misdemeanor count, and he is wearing a GPS monitor and has to have no contact with the victim, his girlfriend, so that he cannot accidentally elbow her again. Let the woman have the Christmas tree, all right? Mr. Metcalf, you may be a Scrooge, but let them have the Christmas tree. I can't believe you would do that. And is it really worth going to jail for? Because I guarantee you that Christmas tree would have been a lot less expensive than going to jail, missing work, posting bond, hiring an attorney, probably going to get some probation and classes. Oh, not to mention you got to find somewhere else to live because you can't go home because you're prohibited from going there with a protection order. Mr. Metcalf, you are a dumb criminal of the day. Congratulations. All right, that's all we have for you today on Crime Talk. If there's some breaking news, we will try to bring it to you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.